Co-presenting, you have brought your co-presenter, so you may have wanted to do this.
Yes, we're co-presenting in the spirit of collaboration.
Right.
I can click that to advance it, right? Okay, so this won't be as much of a robust research presentation, but should be something interesting that might generate some discussion. So we're going to talk to you about our International Maternity Program. This is a Phoenix area group prenatal program for refugee women. And I guess I don't need to introduce myself, except for to tell you that our family medicine department, we teach residents and the medical students. And so we provide this full spectrum family medicine model. So we provide prenatal care and care to, you know, virtually any kind of patient that walks through the door.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Dorn. I'm the Family and Youth Services Manager at the Phoenix branch of the International Rescue Committee. For those of you who don't know, the IRC is a refugee resettlement agency, and we contract with the State Department. We're allocated cases of refugees, and we help to resettle them. We help them with the acculturation process once they get in the United States.
Okay, so our abstract title is Designing a Group Prenatal Care Model for Phoenix Refugee Population. Does it improve birth outcomes? A little deceptive. We're not going to tell you about the birth outcomes yet, but we're going to tell you more about the model. So our objectives are to provide you with a descriptive presentation of what we're doing for this group prenatal care, to discuss the evolution of the current program, because I think these partnerships are kind of interesting to look at. How do they form? Why do they form? How are they functioning together? And to share our evaluation needs assessment that we did. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. Jennifer has none to disclose.
I have none to disclose, right.
All right. So let me first tell you about the centering pregnancy model. Who's heard of the centering pregnancy model? It's very interesting. So the Family Medicine Center at St. Joe's, it originally received a March of Dimes grant to start the centering pregnancy model within our clinic. And for this model, women are seen in groups for their prenatal care. And within that group, the brief exam is done. So obviously not a pelvic exam, right? But the belly check and the Dopplers, that's done in the group space, but in kind of a private setting. And there's this method for doing it that you're taught when you take on centering pregnancy. And women participate in their care. So it's very participation driven. The women learn how to check their blood pressure. They are involved in weighing themselves and all that, with a philosophy that less is done to them and more that they're doing with the provider. They're active participants in their care. Groups are facilitated, not taught, and the topics are flexible. So I'm not lining people up and telling them what we do for prenatal care or what they need to know, but we sit in a discussion circle and we talk about things. And it's supposed to be done, driven from their experiences, not from my experiences. And the topics are flexible, so we may say that we're going to talk about baby feeding, and that may evolve into breastfeeding, and we may just end up talking about breast pumps because somebody had a question, and so we sort of let it snowball like that. And the centering pregnancy model, as it's been designed for non-refugee patients, has been well demonstrated in randomized controlled trials published in the OB-GYN Green Journal, and pretty much has better outcomes across the board, reduced preterm labor, less smoking, less alcohol, more breastfeeding, pretty much everything, and more patient satisfaction. So it's really the model that the March of Dimes is trying to push us to do more. So what does this group look like? So essentially, this is a family medicine conference room used for teaching that we converted for group visits. And you can see it kind of morphed to get a floor, and you know, the room's kind of changed over time. But here's a lady up here doing her blood pressure. The scale's actually now over here. The chairs are set up in a circle. This is necessary because everybody's on kind of equal ground, and it builds on that kind of sitting in a circle storytelling sort of thing. And here, this is kind of a facilitated discussion, and here I am. I sit with all the rest of everybody in the group. So that's that centering pregnancy model. These are non-refugees, and you know they're participating. So when we first did Centering Pregnancy, what we found immediately that the refugee women liked being in these groups. They liked participating in groups. They felt more comfortable, and the providers got to know the women a little bit more, and there was more trust. We had two women from Burma, one from Sierra Leone, one from Congo, in those groups, just kind of participating. And they want to participate in the groups, but the providers had some concerns about language barrier, because the two Burmese women spoke some English, but not enough that they knew what was going on in group. They just liked the idea of it. And the woman from Sierra Leone, we wanted to tailor this just a little bit better. They didn't fit exactly into the centering pregnancy model with the other patients, at least not to our satisfaction. And in thinking about these women, we decided to just take a cursory look at the Arizona birth records. And the Burmese are a newer population coming into Arizona. So in 2008, there were 29 births to women born in Burma. You know, I had to go through and scrub it like the Myanmar and, you know, get them all together. But women that reported that they were from Burma, these were births to them. And five of them were preterm. And when I looked at across the board, they certainly were preterm. They weren't just mislabeled. And of the births of the Somali women, they've been a population here longer. It's a persistent increased rate of neonatal intensive care unit admission to babies born to women who report that they're from Somalia, 11.4%. So that's two times the rate of the rest of the women in Arizona, and 2.5 times the rate of women who are foreign born, because we were just mentioning they have a little bit better outcomes if you're foreign born.
All right, so while St. Joe's, I guess, was having their observations with refugees that they were seeing in their clinic, IRC was starting to see this change in demographics of refugees that were coming into Arizona. The change was, as we mentioned, there were Burmese. There was also a large group of Burundians that had been coming in just prior to the Burmese. They tended to be younger populations in their 20s and 30s of childbearing age, and we were seeing a lot of women coming in pregnant. So there, it was very obvious to us that there was an increased need to somehow pay some attention, some focused attention to these women. Generally, in a refugee resettlement context, we don't have a lot of extra staff or a lot of extra resources to pay particular attention to specific groups. So knowing what we knew, that medical offices are not set up for refugee women, knowing that providers don't understand the refugee process, they don't understand that refugees are legal immigrants, they don't understand that refugees have social security cards, they don't understand that refugees have access to health insurance. And knowing our limitations and the limitations of the medical system, we knew that there was some coordination of care. So in anticipating applying for some March of Dimes funding, I did some research and spoke to March of Dimes, and they actually put us in touch with St. Joe's and said, you know what, they have this great thing going on, and maybe you guys can get together. So really, they were the impetus of our getting together and starting this project.
So the other observations that we had were that we just needed some additional support. Sometimes the providers felt helpless if they had a patient and they didn't know where. I mean, suddenly there's a person on their schedule, they don't know where they're from, what language they speak, what's going on, what was their, there's a gap of knowledge, you know, where they had been screened for tuberculosis, all of these things, because we just weren't working together. The language barriers sometimes could present scary and frustrating situations, and it would add to that cultural barriers too, when it would come around issues of C-section or no C-section and, you know, things like that. And the other observation is it wasn't the patient, because once you got past those hurdles, providers just love these patients because they felt like they were helping and they're making a difference in someone's life. It was just this chaos that would sometimes surround their care. And so we saw that providers weren't bonding with these patients as much, but it was because of all these other factors. It wasn't because they just don't like people from Somalia, or they just don't, that wasn't the case.
Or they don't know about people from Somalia.
Yeah, they just didn't understand. Okay, so
group, prenatal visits. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So basically, we started with a pilot project with March of Dimes funding. The way the pilot project started out was that IRC would enroll women. The way we would find people to enroll is basically they come every week and, you know, we would see them get off the plane, they'd be pregnant, we'd recognize their need for care. Actually, we intended and designed the program to work with refugees who'd kind of been in the United States a little longer. We were really looking at getting to women in that very early, you know, first trimester time period to get the continuous care. But what we noticed as we've been ongoing implementing this is that it's very difficult for us to control that with the number of pregnant women that are coming off the plane right now from these countries. All the scheduling is coordinated between IRC and a nurse at the Family Medical Center. Group sessions occur monthly for each woman. So in theory, they would have, you know, maybe 6 to 8 group visits before giving birth. So it varies for each
plus
of the women.
Visits, yeah.
Plus one-on-one visits. So it varies depending on how long they've been in the United States. They're grouped by language and or country of origin. And our interpreters who are trained in the ethics of interpretation attend the groups. They're paid interpreters, they're professional interpreters. To the extent possible, we get people with medical qualifications to interpret medically. We try not to use family members to interpret. So
they have, additionally, they have these one-to-one visits with their provider, because one thing we had noticed is that sometimes when you make these fantastic programs for refugees, they don't learn how to use the health system outside of your fantastic program. So we really made a concerted effort that we've got this group activity and we're supporting, but we're also maintaining this one-to-one visit kind of thing as well. So they end up with plenty of appointments at the end for the prenatal care. That's okay. I won't push it ahead. So we started with some informal communication, an impromptu focus group, and found initially some of the concerns of women. And we wanted to know, what do we need to do specific for each of these groups, and what do we just need to do across the board as a program? And we found the first thing that was a dividing factor was the comfort with male interpreters or male providers. Male interpreters in the room originally was a concern that our Nepali patients or our Bhutanese refugees had. They stood out along with the Iraqi women as not wanting male interpreters to see them during the exam, but absolutely wanting a live person there. And they'd ask, can they just turn their back, be behind a screen, you know, something like that. The second thing that I hadn't anticipated was the serious concern about getting a circumcision for the baby if you're from the Muslim countries. And our state Medicaid program does not pay for that. And it's difficult to get the circumcision then at a reasonable price, you know, for the way we inflate the cost of health care when it's reimbursed by some insurances, not by others, made it prohibitive. Well, this is such a serious business that it took me a little while to get this worked out, you know, that we can get this at a reasonable price. Concerns of all the women, which I thought was interesting, but having a live interpreter, any way, shape, or form, doesn't matter. I would rather have a live interpreter than the telephone interpreter. Transportation was a concern across the board for everybody, how to get to your visit. Scheduling visits. So if you don't speak English and you need to get an appointment, and people who do speak English and make it through the phone tree have a hard enough time getting appointments, how on earth are they going to get in there? And telephone communication. We had this assumption that everybody has a cell phone, has access to a cell phone, has a landline. That wasn't the case. We ran into that right away, that there's a worry about telephone communication and having a stable number where I can reach them. We did do some live confidential interviews. We had a research assistant outside of the IRC and outside of the medical program to collect some more information. They reported difficulty getting an appointment, and these are women that are actually into our program, some of them into our program. 5 out of 17, transportation problems, 3 out of 17, despite still being in the program, there's other care that takes place and transportation is still an issue. communication problems with the provider, and specifically the comments were, even when you get past the language, there's a cultural aspect that the providers don't understand about them. And interpretation preferences varied by individual across all the different regions. Some people prefer to have an interpreter or a family member that they know. Some people prefer to have somebody they just do not know, so they can have more sense of privacy. Patients reporting that they receive less attention from health professionals because they're a refugee or they speak another language is 4 out of 17. I suspect that's obviously going to be, that's probably a lot higher. Be comfortable with having a male doctor, only 4 out of 17. Almost everybody prefers a female doctor. Comfortable with having a male interpreter, 11 out of 13. Our Iraqi patients said they were not comfortable with having a male interpreter. Thankfully, we have two female Arabic interpreters. But that was very specific to that group. Everybody else said, no, male interpreter's fine, just as long as they turn their back or they're behind the screen. And then everybody who has participated in group sessions felt very comfortable with them. And we asked several questions on that because it was our worry initially. It's like, is this going to go over well or is this a disaster waiting to happen? We also looked at some symptoms of depression. We actually asked several questions, but these ones stood out. Women reported in the past month somewhat or often that they felt hopeless, 9 out of 17, cried easily, 8 out of 17. Or had a loss of interest in activities, 8 out of 17. And when I looked at the individual responses, they're across the board, sometimes or often, for all of those screening questions.
The current program, well, we're actually up to about 40 women now. Our program has been going on for about 7 months. So we're up to about 40 women, 10 have given birth now. We have 5 different groups that run each month. We have 2 Burmese groups, which are made up of about 3 different Burmese ethnic groups. We have a Nepali group, we have an Iraqi group, and then we have a Somali, what we call the Somali African group, which is about half Somali and then half women made up, women from West Africa or Central Africa, so Sierra Leone, Liberia, Burundi, Congo, and that group we're looking to split fairly soon because there actually are some religious and cultural differences, significant religious and cultural differences, but because of the numbers, that's the way it kind of fell. The women speak 7 different languages. We have a full-time IRC coordinator who coordinates all logistics. She makes sure transportation is set up for every group and individual visit. She ensures interpretation for every group and individual visit. She communicates as a liaison between the hospital and the women. A lot of times, if there's a group that we're worried about, for example, Iraqis often aren't, they don't get as involved in activities as some of the other groups that we tend to see. So in that case, she'll make visits, home visits the day before and make sure everybody, you know, is really on board and they're really gonna show up. We have a new full-time clinical care coordinator who will be coming on board in just a couple weeks, and she'll take on a little bit of the responsibilities that are now being held by the logistics coordinator. However, her main role is going to be the education piece. So she'll be doing education during the group sessions, during the prenatal group sessions. We also actually happily received additional funding since this pilot began. And so we're extending the program to include care in the postnatal phase for up to 6 months. So she'll do some groups with the postnatal care, but she's also going to be doing home visits after the babies are born so we can start to really address the issue of continuity of care after birth. There's the coordinating nurse at the Family Medical Center. There's a designated perinatologist at St. Joe's, and Sherry meets with her monthly to discuss the high-risk cases, and there are actually quite a few high-risk cases that we're seeing. A lot of the refugee populations that are coming in now are coming from protracted camp experiences, so they've been spending 20 to 30 years or more in the camps, and there's a lot of issues that you can imagine, risk factors that come along with that. There are the faculty at St. Joe's Family Medical Center, and there's also 24 resident family physicians, each of whom are assigned cases from this group and follow their care through the course of their pregnancy.
So what works well? So we set out not knowing if groups were going to work out so well, just kind of hesitant, let's give it a try, it seems like it might work. I think it's worked beyond our wildest dreams to put people into groups. It seemed natural for the women. It's put them on a more even plane instead of a bunch of people looking down and telling them what to do. They feel like they're part of a kind of a prenatal care community. It's also built some community infrastructure because they teach each other. And we have the women come back after they have their baby with the baby and they tell their birth experience. So it's built trust where trust wasn't there before. Sometimes you tell people they're going to be okay and you just don't anticipate them dying in childbirth because they're always asking about that. And, you know, nothing speaks like an experience, though. They need the story. They need to see somebody that made it through and they're okay. And so that the groups have been fantastic, actually. And in cases where we've had, you know, there's some women that they just don't really trust us and they had a baby outside of the U.S. and they're not really sure that they buy into getting any prenatal care at all, we find that there's some natural women that kind of work as peers and kind of invite them and bring them along. Well, at least come and have fun and, you know, and they kind of help bridge those gaps. So groups have worked out really well.
I think from a coordination perspective, because we grapple with this all the time, like how, with all the things that we're supposed to do with refugees when they get here, how on earth are we going to do it all? And so I think what we've learned about what works in this particular program with this particular group of people in terms of communication, which is always going to be an issue across the board, one of the great stressors for the women, as Sherry said earlier, was the idea of not having access to even a telephone. And one of the differences that we're seeing now with refugees coming into the U.S. is that there are no jobs. And so their husbands or they themselves are not getting jobs. They don't have any income. And so simple things like telephones or even access to transportation, which refugees, they generally acclimate pretty quickly and you know, are able to get those things pretty quickly. They don't have those now. So with communication, we've gotten cell phones now for them all. They're like just little Cricket things. They're $30. They sign a contract. They can only use it to call the hospital or to call us about their children or about the program. Sorry. Now I'm like, wow. And so we have them all programmed. So they call us. They hang up. We know it's them. We call back with an interpreter. And we've started to devise little solutions like that. In terms of transportation, we've identified actually a refugee-owned medical transportation company, which has been really great because they understand that, you know, they'll get there a half an hour early and have to go knock on the door and be like, you know, take a shower, do this, remember that you have to get ready for your visit. Well, I guess I'll go and say the other thing about coordination is kind of getting people into the program, and I think that's one of the biggest successes we've had, that as women start to see what's in it for them, and it's not even necessarily the medical care, it's the getting together with other people, the having the chance to talk, learning who your doctor is, taking a trip around the hospital and seeing where you, and sometimes it's even like, oh wow, this is like a machine that I've never seen before, this is a bed that my husband can sleep in when he comes, or just things like that that they've never seen before. I think they've seen it, what's in it for them, they're starting to enjoy it more, and they're actually telling other women about it. So for us, the whole process of enrolling people and bringing participants into the program is just much less of a job for us now. And so that actually speaks totally to like the fact that the program is working. So we can talk about what needs improvement later.
Yeah. You guys have any questions?
Huh? Okay. I know we only had 1 minute, so I think you said there'll be time to talk after. So.